Now, in recent days, the case of Irish woman Michaela McCollum Connolly and Melissa Reid has attracted much media attention and presumably will continue to do so in the days and months ahead as they face questioning. But at any given time, upwards of 1,000 Irish passport holders are in jail and prison overseas in some of the toughest regimes in the world, from Thailand to South America. So what is life really like in a foreign jail? And what advice do former inmates have for getting through a prison stretch in a crowded and often dangerous environment? Brian O'Connell has been speaking with two former inmates who served their time overseas. Brian, good morning to you.
Good morning, Miles.
Tell us who you met.
I met two persons, Miles. Both of them spent over 10 years between them in jails in Thailand and Barbados. And both of them had advice for persons, you know, who may find themselves in a position where they're facing a long stretch in a jail overseas. One of the men I met was Colin Martin, and he wrote a book, Miles, called Welcome to Hell. And in that, he detailed his time in a jail in Thailand, which was ironically called the Bangkok Hilton. And he was jailed for life for murder. He's always protested his innocence. The second person then I met is a man called Terry Donaldson. And Terry served time in Barbados for drug smuggling.
OK, we'll start with Terry Donaldson. He was a man, I think he told you, he lived for a long time in Clifton in County Galway. He raised his daughter in a renovated cottage there. He also battled with drug and alcohol problems for a lot of his life. And this is what ultimately cost him his freedom, isn't it?
It is. And we've heard in recent days, Miles, that one of the suggestions for what happened to the two women in Peru was that they were coerced maybe in some way into smuggling from drugs from Peru to Spain, and that they may have been approached in Spain to do this. So Terry Donaldson, he wasn't coerced, but he was approached in London to smuggle drugs, and he took a chance. This resulted in him spending time in jail in Barbados. He's currently living in London, and he takes up the story here, Miles, on the phone from the UK.
I ended up in debt to a dealer, and the dealer said to me, look, to clear the debt, all you got to do is an easy in, easy out. I didn't know where I was going on the day. He got me a ticket. I got on a plane. I got off. I spent a week on this island. This was Barbados I was in. And on the way back, I was caught with a whole load of drugs in my suitcase.
And were you living in Ireland when you were approached?
No. I'd recently sold the cottage, and I'd been back here in London, actually, at that point. But these people, they operate across and beyond all different kinds of borders, you must understand, you know.
And how much money were you promised in exchange for it?
Just $5,000, that was all. When you're in a drug-addled state, that sort of money can seem very appealing, and you're in a state of mind where you don't really reckon the consequences.
You obviously knew how much drugs you had on you, did you?
Not really, no. I wasn't even sure that I had drugs or what it was in the suitcase.
So he was caught with 3 kilos of cocaine, and he told you he felt the airport police were actually tipped off that he was coming through.
Yeah, and again, this is something we've heard, similar allegations mentioned in recent days around this. In Terry's case, he believes that the dealers actually got about 50 plus kilos through the airport, and he was the decoy. So he thinks that the airport police were paid off and the dealers were only too happy to sacrifice him. But he wasn't, he wasn't forced, and he made the decision to break the law himself, it should be said. He was sentenced to 4 years, Miles. He served 3. But actually, he says that the experience in jail, you know, it turned his life around. It's where he got clean, he eliminated alcohol and drugs from his life and really started to put his life back together, as he explains now.
It was a learning opportunity, let me put it that way. I had a chance to get off the stuff, get my thinking back. I read novels and things like that, anything really, bits of Bible as well, of course, just to pass the time and to keep the mind active. The jail I was in was called Glendary, and you'll see that if you Google it, but it was built about 1830. It was a slave pen before it became a prison. In prison, and I've since applied this to outside prison, my rule is stay away from the drugs and stay away from what we call the buller men. That's like the sexual deviants and so on and so forth. And as long as you can do that, you're basically away from 95% of any possible trouble.
And was there a lot of pressure put on you to name the persons who approached you?
Of course there is. I mean, the police want to know everything. I didn't know any names. In fact, I made it a point not to know. I thought if I'm going in on this venture, The less I know, the better, because if it all comes on top, less going to be able to tell them, and the less I tell them, the safer I'm going to be when I come out.
OK, and given your experience in jail in Barbados, what advice would you give to the two girls and their families?
I would say sit tight. The worst has happened. Learn the language. Do some reading. Accept what's happened. Get on with doing your time. Get a job in the prison if you can. Definitely learn the language is a great opportunity to do something there. Read the Bible. It's not a bad move either. But get your head down and make yourself useful.
Now, you also asked him, Brian, you asked Terry, if his conviction has had implications for his life subsequently.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm banned from America, really. I mean, I went there. I got stopped at JFK airport and sent back on the next plane. There's a lot of those places I can't go to now. They really don't want to know about people that have been involved in drug trafficking. You have to fill in special forms and really go into every month of your life and so on that you've ever spent in any wayward way. It does. It does limit your life. I mean, lots of jobs and things aren't open to anybody with such a serious conviction. But that's the nature of the beast, you know.
Yeah, so as he said there, Miles, his conviction has had serious consequences for his life afterwards. He's a published author now, and he does help with prisoner organisations who in turn help prisoners overseas. And in fairness to him, he's managed to stay clean and sober since his release from prison in Barbados.
Now, the second person you met, his story may be somewhat more familiar to people. His name is Colin Martin. He's from County Monaghan. He wrote a best-selling book, as you said at the beginning there, Welcome to Hell, based on his 8 years of a life sentence that he spent in prison in Thailand. Tell us first how he came to end up being sentenced to life in Thailand.
Well, Colin was a businessman and he had an issue with a former business partner who owed him money, some €500,000, I think. Colin tracked him down and a fight ensued during which one man present lost his life. Now, Colin Martin has always maintained his innocence. He has claimed self-defence, but he was sentenced to life in prison in one of the harshest regimes in the world. He began, Miles, by explaining to me how one of the biggest challenges in prison is the language.
Language is a big barrier, especially when you're trying to get anything, even sometimes getting somewhere to sleep. You know, you're getting assigned to whatever. In the prison I was in, you actually have to pay to get a specific spot in your room to sleep. And then you're trying to communicate with the guards or, you know, you want to go for a visit or whatever. It is difficult. I spent 8 years in Thailand. I mean, I speak Thai like a native now. You know, you do need to learn it. It is a different world. And obviously a lot of the guards and the prison officials there, I mean, they're on a small salary. And they see you as a meal ticket because you're a Westerner. Obviously, you've got more money than they'll ever have. Even if you are, you know, from a normal family or, you know, middle-class incomes or whatever, even low income, they use that. And it tops their salaries up. You know, I mean, like when I was in Thailand, if you want to sit under a particular tree, one of the guards would come over and that's my tree. You have to pay me to sit there, you know, to get the shade. It's just the way it is. I was asked to go work in one of the factories and I actually said to the guard, no, I'm not going to work. And he said, well, I'm losing money if you don't work. I said, well, how are you losing money? You get your salary. But obviously they get a percentage or a commission or whatever's produced in factories. Again, it would be the same, I'm sure, in Peru. You know, I know in Thailand specifically, like if you're getting money paid in, if your family are paying money in, the guards will charge you 10% of whatever's paid in for you to get that onto your account so you can access it. It's just corrupt. But, you know, you either want it or you don't. And you either play ball or you don't. And if you don't play ball, it could take a month or 2 months for your finances or whatever for you to come through.
Now, you also asked him, Brian, how he managed to survive the prison regime. And he told you about overcoming dangerous situations as well as, I suppose, the temptations of prison life.
I am proud of myself that I managed to get through it in one piece. I know guys that didn't. You know, obviously you have access to drugs. I mean, I know guys were in there and they were on Prozac every day or whatever they could get. And they would just get melted or get out of it. That's just how they coped and how they managed. I mean, I didn't. I just tried to stay strong and you try and stay focused and try and keep yourself busy. If it is only reading a book or if it's playing chess or but doing something, you know, because if you just sit, you will vegetate and, you know, your mind will start to wander and it's, you know, it isn't a good place to be, you know. When I went into the Thai prison first, you do get picked on. They are trying to see, you know, what you are, who you are. But, you know, you stand up for yourself. You may get into a fight, you may get beat. But you're not making it easy for them. They actually want an easy victim. So you stand up for yourself the first time, the second. It becomes too much trouble for them. And then they just go pick on somebody that's easier. But you do need to stand up for yourself, otherwise you're going to have a really bad time in there if you, you know, if you come across as being weak.
Yeah, and he was telling me, Miles, that the first room in the prison he was put into had 165 guys in it sleeping, and they slept head to toe. He didn't sleep in a bed for 8 years. He campaigned for his cause, and he was helped by overseas prisoner organisations and others. As I said, he'd been sentenced to life, but eventually, after 8 years, he got out of prison and he received a king's pardon. He returned home. He now works in Chad, actually, in the oil business. And he actually went back to Thailand after his release to bring gifts back to the prisoners. He was saying prisoners would often say, when I get out, I'm going to come back here with gifts for you in a year's time with food. And nobody ever did. So he actually made that trip back. And I suppose he felt that the British embassy gave him better consular service than the Irish embassy. He was quite critical of the Irish embassy and the kind of help that they gave him overseas. And he was making the point to me that if the girls, I suppose Michaela, had a choice between the Irish and the British embassy, that she should maybe think about the British embassy, because at least that they provided him with access to medical facilities once a month, and the Irish embassy weren't able to provide that. Finally, I asked him, Miles, what impact being in prison for such a long time had on him.
It's something that'll never go away. It is always going to be a part of you. Freedom is very important to me. And obviously that comes from being locked up for 8 years. You know, the ability to come and go as I please. Silly little things that maybe you take for granted. I mean, I noticed when I went home, the ability to go make a cup of tea when you wanted one. You know, to be able to open a door without having to ask or knock. But it's things we take for granted. You know, laying in your bed late. You know, actually being in a bed. I mean, I slept on the floor for 8 years. But simple little things in life that you think nothing of, they do actually end up meaning so much to you when you're at home. My family did come to visit me, but at the same time, I actually told them not to. I mean, one reason I don't want my family seeing me like that, I mean, I wore chains like shackles for 2 years. And then the other side of it too, I actually said to my brother, what it's costing you to come and visit me, I can live here for a year. Any prison overseas, my advice would be, obviously, I would just get my head down, do my time, fight your case. Don't let yourself get down into the doldrums or woe is me syndrome. Try and be as mentally strong as you can. Stay focused on getting out.
Right, well, for any Irish families who may have family members in prison overseas, the Irish Council for Prisoners Overseas provides some assistance, as do Irish embassies and consulate services in countries abroad. Obviously, in Peru, at the moment, we have an honorary consul. We're actually between, I think, honorary consuls at the moment, which is unfortunate. But we've already heard on the programme this morning from Nasaba Halawa how, in Egypt, the Irish Council is working very, very hard to secure the release, or at least to secure your information about the whereabouts of her siblings. And you may recall that Maurice Foley, a Peru priest, or an Irish priest based in Peru, we talked to him when he was back in Ireland, said that it would be 50 to a cell, and that the prisoners swap beds, some sleeping by day and some sleeping by night. Brian, thank you very much indeed for that.
Thanks, Miles.